From Studio 43 in Welcome, North Carolina, you're listening to the Richard Petty Motorsports Podcast. Hey, what's up, guys? My name is Bradley Sisson on the marketing team here at Richard Petty Motorsports. I've been a 43 fan my whole life and really excited to share with you our newest venture, starting a podcast. So alongside me, I've got our producer, Chris Sullivan.
Hey, everybody.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that took a lot of effort for me.
Yeah. So this is episode one, and we wanted to start out and just introduce the podcast to you. If you're a new listener, thank you for being here. Hope you come back real soon. But basically, we were discussing it, and we just thought it would be a great way to share some inside info, stories, perspective from our team with our fan base. And we can, you know, distribute it out, and you can plug it up while you're driving to work or going on vacation or hanging out with your family. And really want it to be educational, fun, just a good listen from an inside perspective. You know, there's a few other NASCAR podcasts out there that I'm sure our listeners are familiar with, and they're all pretty good, but you know, this one is more focused on just a perspective from here at RPM. And you know, we're hoping to have, you know, past, present, you know, future employees, team members, you know, friends of the family, just anyone who has some good stories to tell, some good insight to provide, and wants to come on and talk with us for a bit.
Yep.
So today, episode one, we've got a really interesting guest for you. Our fueler, Ian Anderson, fueler or gas man, depending on which one you call it there. I always called it a gas man, and found out there are multiple terms.
When he dropped fueler on us, I didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
It's like...
You need to know. I thought we had the gas man coming in, but
no, I'm a fueler.
Right.
Okay.
Great conversation with Ian. Ian was a pretty big time college football player. You know, had interest in going pro. Was really a beast. And you know, his life path took him down the road to being a NASCAR crew member. And he shares his story from how he got to that point and how much it means to him and. You know, how much he enjoys being part of this team and this family. Really, you'll hear that word a lot, family. So, I guess without further ado, here's Ian. Enjoy.
Okay. I'm Ian Anderson. I am the fueler on the 43 Cup car for Richard Petty Motorsports. I am from Pofftown, North Carolina, and this is my third. No, hold on.
Do the math.
Well, Bubba's first year with Petty was my first year with Petty.
2017, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you said you're the fueler. Is that the technical term?
Gas man, fueler. It's just, okay. You know, they're synonymous. It depends on who you ask.
Because I hadn't heard that term until I got in the sport. Well, I always was like, yeah, it's the gas man. You know, he holds the gas can. And what's hilarious, too, is that I don't think he's going to be with us too much longer, but we actually have a crew member whose last name is Gassman.
Yeah.
Gassmann. And I was so disappointed when I found out
that
he's not the gas man.
No, he is not. I'm a little bit more fit for the job.
Yeah.
I do like Steve. I'll give him that.
Yeah, he's a good dude. So I'm going to start out most of these interviews with the same question. We were talking about it a little bit earlier, but every time we're at the track during the weekend and I'm doing hospitality stuff or meeting guests or whatever, I always get the question, you know, how does somebody get this job? How do you get into the sport? Because it's not like, you know, you can go on Indeed and find an application, put your qualifications in and be good to go. So, you know, talk a little bit about your journey to getting to where you're at today.
Well, I think NASCAR is, it's a lot like any professional sport, you know. It is a lot like it, but it's also very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
And main ones on our side, when you're going over the wall, it's gotten to the point where you're getting kind of recruited. You know, when you get into the sport, you establish yourself. And then you know, you kind of move around. But getting into the sport, I was I played football at Ball State University. Being from Pofftown, and played at Reagan High School, got recruited, decided I wanted to go to Ball State. That's in Muncie, Indiana. The Ball Mason Jar, if you ever heard of it, you're welcome.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this before, but you're refreshing my memory.
So after I was getting out and I was talking to my parents. I actually had an interview with Marty Smith and on college game day because we did this really bizarre workout where I dressed up like the Hulk. I had crazy. I looked. It was intense. So
we'll come back to that.
Yeah. So after that, when that went viral on college game day, after that, Marty gave me his number and he said, "Hey, what do you want to do? I mean, you got this charismatic personality. So what do you want to do?" And I was like, "Well, I actually, a lot of guys say, want me to be a professional wrestler." I said, "I'm not really into all that." I said, "I'd much rather go into NASCAR. I got a real, you know, I want to be on pit crew." And he was like, "Wow, that's pretty cool."
So you knew beforehand you had an interest in that.
Yeah, it's actually 1 year to the date I got interviewed by Ball State. And after the interview, 1 year almost to the date, I signed with RCR.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's a pretty cool story. But after I trained for the NFL draft, I had two pro days. Cool, kind of a weird thing is I did 43 reps at 225 and I'm on a 43 car. So I think that was pretty.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. My first position with the Petties was up at Petty's Garage, and I just remember one of the guys who'd been with the family for a long time. You know, some kind of coincidence came up where we had 43 or something, or it was like number 43 or something, and he looked at me and he goes, "You're going to see that number a lot." I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "It just happens. You'll notice it." And he wasn't lying. That I see the number 43 in so many things that happened just coincidentally throughout the day, you know, or just in life. And it's every time I see it, I think of what his name was Bruce. I'm thinking of what Bruce told me. He's like, "You're going to see that number pop up." So it's funny you mentioned that because it's not just me.
Yeah, no, it's not just you. So then after that, I got recruited by Hendrick Motorsports. So they go to the coaches' clinics, they recruit guys. And what they do is they bring about 100 of us in. And then they knock that number down to about 60 and then invite about 30 of us back for a camp. Like it's like 2 or 3 days long.
Mm.
So, and then that's when it's more NASCAR specific. Before that, it was kind of just overall athleticism, stuff like that. They kind of just wanted to see what they could do. And because the sport has really gotten to the point where it's easier to teach an athlete to use a wrench than it is to make a mechanic athletic.
Right.
So the nature of the beast is you want to go fast, and we're living in hundreds of seconds, you know. So the element of human error is a good thing because it makes competition, but it's also the part, you know, that you got to hone your craft.
Yeah.
So after I got recruited by there, I got down to, like, the final 10 callback, and they only hired 6. And it was a blessing in disguise. At first I was praying about it. I was like, "Oh, this is where I want to be." Guys were, you know, this seemed like a good fit. And when he called me back, he was like, "Man, I regret to inform you, like, it's not going to work out."
Mm-hmm.
And all I asked, I said, "I appreciate the opportunity. All I ask is that you give me contacts." He said, "You belong in the sport. You got a passion for it." All I ask is just contacts to get my foot in the door. Mm-hmm. Just vouch for my work ethic. And I said, "And I'll do the rest." And I appreciate it. So I contacted a lot of people. And still waiting on some of them to call me back. You know, 3-4 years later, I'm still waiting.
If you're listening out there, Ian, just like a
just a call back.
Just, yeah, I got your message.
Yeah. So some of those guys never called me back, but there was a couple that did. And actually, Petty, but when they were still in Mooresville, I went in there, and Rob Rogers was there and took me in and showed me around. And nothing really, you know, festered about that or, you know, came about it. But I enjoyed just to see that, you know. And then I got a call from Ray right here at RCR, and I came here, and they could see, you know, work ethic, it's contagious and it's visible. People see you working really hard. They can. So that's basically what I did. I went down there and I just hung around. And when I saw something that could be done, I did it. Wasn't getting paid. 3-4 months. I came 7 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. I was working, and they were like, "Hey, this guy's worthy of it. Let's give him a shot." So an opportunity opened up. And some of the guys that were above me that I kind of looked up to that had helped me kind of get my feet in the door and kind of get established, they vouched for me and said, "Yeah, we'll make sure he's ready for Daytona."
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, coming in, then I got ready, and then they put me on Brendan Gaughan's car. Love Brendan. Great guy. And then I started out on the 62 Xfinity car, and that was my first go at it.
Did you know from the get-go that you wanted to be a fueler, or was Jack Mann ever in the
thought? Actually, I started. Yeah, when I first started, when I first was doing, you know, truck and ARCA and stuff like that, I actually was a rear carrier because we had 6 men at that time.
Right.
And then an opportunity opened up, and that's kind of where, you know, my build and where my stature and everything.
I didn't mean to offend you by not suggesting a tire changer, but I mean, you're a big dude.
My stature is kind of fit more for that mold. You have to be taller, stronger, you know, for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those guys are usually a little bit smaller. I mean, they're not saying that there ain't big guys doing it, but my attributes were more fit for that position.
What did you play in college?
Offensive guard.
Okay. Yeah.
Number 69, Ball State University.
That's like the perfect combination there.
Oh yes, sir.
So that first, so Daytona was your first basically national series event. Like with Picker guys, you know, with drivers, they might like throw them in at Martinsville or something to kind of get their feet wet. Do they do the same thing with crew guys? Or
sometimes, not necessarily. Not if you know, if their guys are rolling. A big thing about being on pit crew is it's not. You could take the five best guys in the sport, put them on a team together, and they won't be good.
Right.
It's all about chemistry, flow. I mean, how you build that. You know what I mean? Like, it's how can they flow together? It's like, when it goes perfect, we feel it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a perfect choreographed dance. Like, everything's going smoothly. When it's going bad, it's not just like, sometimes people on the outside will look at it and be like, look at the time and think, oh, that was a pretty decent stop. But then you'll see a guy getting angry and you'll wonder why. It was because something didn't go right. It didn't flow right.
Yeah. I was, you know, that's a good point you bring up because, during the race, I'm standing there underneath the pit box. I'm there with you guys. And, like, I'll see him come in, four tires, fuel adjustments, boom, off, decent stop, right? And then I'll look and somebody will just, like, scream or whatever or slam gloves down or something. And I'm like, why are they upset? So it's probably because the flow just didn't
feel
like
you
wanted.
It. And then the repetition that you have down in practice, you're trying to get it. To where it's, you know, you practice like you play. So if you can, you don't want to have any mistakes. Fiedler, one of the things he said to me a couple of years ago, and it really resonated with me, was the difference between, you know, great and good.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that, you know, a good person, player, athlete, whatever you want to say, practices it until they can get it, you know, till they can get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Where a great one practices until they can't
get it wrong. Yeah.
And that really resonated with me because, like, you want to make it as – We still try to replicate what's going on down there that we're going to deal with at the racetrack. But, you know, you can't really replicate a race until you go through it. So experience is very, very important. And like you said, throwing me in.
Yeah, was that nerve-wracking? Like,
absolutely, because
you know, you played college football at a very high level. So, like, it's not like it's the first time you've been in live competition.
I love
right?
the pressure.
Yeah.
I told my dad, I said, one of the coolest things about being in NASCAR that you can't really replicate is when you were the nerve feeling. Like I said, in football, there's lulls. I'm not going to say that there's not. I'm giving 110%, but the feeling that I receive when the game's on the line or it's third and short and I know we're running or fourth and one or fourth and goal or your back's against the wall, that feeling, I get that every pit stop.
Right.
So you
because they're all important.
Yes, they're every one of them. Yeah, not saying that they weren't before, but like you're saying, every single one of them, it's to minute single. And because a football play in reality is like under 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Of the violence that you're dealing with. Well, if you emulate that pressure. And then another thing that I like to, you know, relate it to is my coach used to say, well, there's five of us now. You know, there used to be six, but a perfect example. Offensive line, there's five of us. Mm-hmm. Coach used to say, when you got five individuals, you slap somebody, it hurts. But when those five come together and they make a fist, you can knock somebody out.
Right.
So when we work together and everything's flowing good, you'll see it. You'll see the energy, the excitement when those guys are looking at each other with fist bumping and stuff like that. But, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. I mess up. That's another thing that's important.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everybody's got to go and do their job together. So that we all succeed.
Right.
So I think that's important.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, you were equating it to, like, as an offensive line. I was talking with our producer, Chris, here earlier today about how I look at it almost like a basketball team just because now there's five, right? So there's five on the court, five over the wall. And when I look at, like, you know, the people that are doing it, like, I'm just curious, from your point of view, you know, who is the center? Who's the power forward? Who's point guard? Like assign a basketball position to everybody on our crew.
Well, that's difficult for me because, I mean, I can hoop a little bit. I'm in a basketball league, but I would say if you had to do it that way, that's kind of difficult. But for the most part, I would say I play center.
Right.
Our point guard and our, you know, our two guards would probably, I would have to say, are your changers.
Yeah.
You know, and then you would say, I'd probably say a carrier would be your small forward, and then your power forward would be your jackman. If I said it was an offensive line, your center typically is the guy that everything is built around. And the way that management and the way the stop.
And maybe this is a better analogy, too.
The way the stop is now, the center of it is your jackman.
Gotcha.
Because he's now – Doug's having to do two roles rather than one. I mean, he's having to come around, post a car, where he used to just rip the right rear off, flip it, come around, and then just jack the car. Well, now he's got to be perfect. He's got to come around, post the car, index the tire, come back to the jack, drop the jack, run around the car, post the left side, and then take it from the hip while that guy's already hit his lug, boom, and he's got to hang it, and he can't miss.
Yeah.
So Doug, you know, obviously – the nature of the pit stop has kind of rotated to where it was all about lugs. It's still all about lugs, but I'd say the center is definitely the jack man. And then I don't really know where I fall into the offensive line because a tackle, maybe if we're on front side or if I'm on backside tackle and we're running zone right.
Right.
Maybe, but.
Yeah, that's interesting. The jack man is definitely going to have a big role, even maybe more so next year with some of the changes that they've made, which will be.
So will I. I got to be a lot faster.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you, you know, like, so what they've announced or what they've talked about is that they're going from, like, in theory, 0.8 to 0.5 seconds per change with the 5 to 1 lug nut change. So is the focus, do you think, and this is obviously just speculation because we'll find out when it comes, right? But do you think the focus will be, okay, we got to get fuel in the car faster, or we need to make sure we time our stops right to where we have enough fuel in the car? Does that make sense?
That'll be strategy. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Because it'll either be I'm going to try and go longer or I'm going to try to go shorter and pray for a caution, because when it boils down, that's going to be all on their our show. Honestly, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's going to be all on them because I'm a foot soldier.
Right. Well, but I think what you're proving, the point you're proving is that there's still going to be some excitement for the fans, you know. If not, I mean, just as much with it, you may take, I don't even want to say you take away an element. You change one element, right? And so
that it'll be different.
Yeah, definitely. But where that may seem like, okay, it's going to be easier to get a wheel on and off, now you got to think about your fuel, right? Because
in the jack.
Right.
Because he's going to have to be hauling the mail coming around because the one thing that I've heard and kind of seen, you still can miss the hang, not very likely because it has the studs on the back. It'll you can still kind of miss the hang, but that's not going to be.
You're talking studs on the back of the wheel,
yes, right? Because on the hub, there's indentions of the back on the new wheel,
right?
The one lug one, and then you can get that. That's so not.
You
gonna
can't.
Be
you can't just toss it up there, but
and then think you're going to ride it on. No,
right. There's still a
small. I mean, it's very little, but the other thing is you can't spool the gun up. You'll strip the lug. You actually got to set it on there and pull it off. So it's going to be about the timing on how well that guy. So the tire changers are still going to be the same guys, in my opinion, just because of the simple fact that those guys have mastered the craft of hand-eye coordination. Like, when you watch it now, it's fascinating. Yeah. Even in slow motion, it still doesn't make sense how their brain can, you know, be able to differentiate, you know, especially if they miss one, to be able to come across again. But the one lug, it'll change, like you said.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. I'm trying to – I keep an optimistic and open mind for things, you know, especially when – I mean – changes are going to happen. They're going to get put in place, and we've got to adapt one way or the other.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I look forward to the new, because everything brings a new challenge. So I'm looking forward to that. But so if you're looking at your five guys there, is there somebody you think is like the captain, or is it, or like who is there a head coach? I guess that'd be Ray.
Yeah, right? Ray Wright down at RCR. He coordinates our practice. Then we also have a guy that does our workouts.
Yeah. So talk about then. See, we've talked about it here. You've practiced down at RCR, right?
Yeah.
So you guys practice with and around like the 3 and the 8 guys and the ones
and the 13.
And 13, okay. So
anybody on this compound that pits these cars that are on this compound. So we're at the top of the hill. You have the 43. Mm-hmm. And you got the in-house cars, the 8 and the 3, and then you go to the bottom of the hill and you have the 13.
Right.
All of those guys practice in that building down there, and we all work out together too.
Is that, do you think that helps you a lot, having a bigger group?
Yeah. I mean, we still have our continuity.
Right.
You know, with our guys, we're really, really tight. And some of the teams actually make comments about that, how tight the 43 group is.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's media members that make comments about how tight our group is.
Like our group, our guys, we love each other, and we don't care to show it. You know what I mean? Like, I got no problem, and we always got each other's back. Being down there, it's also good because, you know, you can always have a little bit of bias when you see things. We help each other down there.
Yeah.
You know,
but does it raise the competition level?
It does.
It's like,
for sure.
It's like you've got, you know, is it helpful to have two, three other groups of five guys that you want to beat every day during the week, not just at
the racetrack?
Yeah.
You know, and it's guys that you get to see every day too. So you got to deal with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's a good element that they've added, because when we go down there, you know, everything is broken down. Everything.
Yeah.
We see, you know, the eye in the sky.
So you've got a, just for the folks at home who may not know, you have a camera that's basically a bird's eye view, like directly over the stop, right?
Not just that. They also, the changer has a helmet cam. Mm-hmm. He wears a GoPro. And that's being broken down right now down the hill. And they meet with all the changers and they watch the individual film. And then the coaches will discuss it with the guy individually. And then the group, you know, some of the veteran guys will say, hey, look, your gun angle was off here.
Mm.
You know, your hand speed was wrong here. You know, if you had loose here or not that, you know what I mean? Like everything is broken down. And that's one of the coolest things. And it was such an easy transition coming from college football, because they beat you overhead with video and football.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about, they'll break your step down wrong. Well, here, they'll break it down and you have a timesheet. Everything is broken down.
Wow.
And then you'll see them and they post them. And then they have the average of the company and then compared yours to the average.
Oh, wow.
And they'll have them all on the board. So, you know, there's no
hiding. There's no hiding. Yeah. No,
right when you walk in, they'll tell you, how was the runaround? How was the plug-in? How was the exchange?
I'd be willing to bet that most fans don't realize how much that's broken down. I think they understand that you guys practice during the week, right? And they understand that you're looking at your stop times. But, like, that's really science in it, you know, pretty good.
You have to break it down like that, because – when you're dealing in small increments of time, we're not talking about seconds, we're talking about hundreds of seconds, you know, thousands of seconds. When you're breaking it down from tenths to, you know, thousands of a second, you need to find, where can I gain the advantage? Mm-hmm. Where am I losing my time? How can he do it faster than me?
Right.
Why is he able to do it? So you break it all down, and then you're able.
That's got to get frustrating at times too, right?
Extremely.
Because you're thinking, like, it's at its core, it's not really all that complicated. You know, it's like
mental.
It's like we're doing the same exact thing. We're equally equipped to do this thing.
Yeah.
You know, yet he's doing it faster than me. That's got to eat at you a little bit, right?
It does, and that's the good thing.
Yeah.
Because when you're in a sport, you got to be competitive.
Yeah.
If you're not, you're doing it for the wrong reason. Like, we love being competitive, and I love, you know, you love, you know, winning, you know, whether it be your individual battle or the entire war. But mm-hmm. you enjoy competing and winning. And that's one of the really, really cool things that we get to do on a daily basis. So this was a really good thing for me, because I'm a really competitive person. And it was such an easy transition that I got to feed that element
mm-hmm.
via this. And I still got that family element. And it's way more, especially the thing that I love most about Petty, and I don't know about, the thing I love is the closeness of it.
Mm-hmm.
NASCAR in its foundation was based on family values.
Yeah.
And yes, we all compete, and we've said this before when they interviewed me. I always told them, I said, you know, I call it like the traveling circus or circuit.
It definitely is, yeah.
But you got to, like, we wave at everybody, and we're friends with all the guys on pit road. But the only reason that, you know, I got to get along with them. I see them 38 weekends out of the year.
Right.
So why be angry at a guy? I said, but once that green flag drops,
we
compete until the checkered. Then once it's over, hey, man, congratulations, good job, you know. Good for you guys, you know, and then we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
That's how it works, because I think there's a lot of fans that may not like – I think there's some attitude towards, especially like the drivers, that it's like almost that they don't like how they're friends sometimes. Like, they see drivers hanging out and doing stuff together, and they're like, aren't these guys supposed to be competitors? But I think, you know, you touched on it, when you spend 38 weekends a year traveling the country with the same group of people – you gotta get along. You gotta stay cordial, because if you hated them the whole time, like, it'd be miserable.
It's like professional wrestlers.
Yeah. When but you, like you said, as soon as the green flag drops, it all goes. It all goes out the window.
That's when everything. That's when you're competing, you're not worried about it.
Yeah.
Until afterward, then it's like, you know, but you're still gonna have that element like, okay, that guy beat me. Now I want to beat him again. Mm-hmm. I got next week, you know, or next stop or things like that. But if you're, yeah, you're right. It'd wear you out if you were pissed at the guy all the time.
Yeah. Something that you guys did a piece on this with, I think both NBC and Fox, but you know, a lot of our fans know that we waved everybody, or you guys waved everybody on pit road before the start of the race. You know, we don't need to go into too much detail, but just like, how important is that to you, and why do you enjoy doing that? And
all right, I'll give you a synopsis of it. The way I look at it. So when I joined the team, when I was working at RCR, I'd always see it, and I'd be like, you know, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's their prerogative.
And if anybody listening doesn't know what I'm talking about, all five of our guys line up on the edge of the pit box. As soon as they say, gentlemen, start your engines, and the guys, you know, fire up and start rolling down pit road, if we're in a position where the cars are behind our box, you guys will be out there, and you'll wave to every pace car, competitor, and safety vehicle just as like a sportsmanship. You know, kind of good luck before we all go compete. I try to post videos as much as I can of that.
Well, it boils down to the fact that James started when he was there, and his reason.
And James is the carrier, right?
Yes. Yeah. And James has worked at Petty. I want to say seven or 8 years he's been at Petty. And I believe he told me when I first got on the team, it was just something you did. You know what I mean? When you got out there, you didn't really understand it because it was a tradition, and NASCAR is about tradition. So when I'm here, this is what they did before I got here. This is paying homage to the guys before me at first. Mm-hmm. Then I bought into it, and I was like, okay, this makes sense. You get a little bit of, you know, because that green flag hadn't dropped yet. So right. We're still all those friends. Mm-hmm. And when I see those guys coming by, you're trying to, you know, just let them know, hey, good luck, be safe,
right.
You know, go compete. And like James always says, there's some guys that those guys aren't out there, you know. Not the guys that are always in the front, but some of those guys that are still competing in the back. Yeah, their guys aren't out there waving at them or anything. So it's just like, we see you. Good luck. Have fun. And then there's also different drivers. They're starting to buy in, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I always like it. And, you know, I hate to bring up what happened at the end of the 500 there, but it kind of reminds you why you do it, right? Because nobody ever wants to see anybody else get hurt.
It's scary.
Yeah, it's scary for everybody, right? And so that's, you know, it's kind of our way of just saying, good luck, hope. You know, like you said, be safe. Wishing the best for you, wishing better for us, right? But you know, yeah. So it's I think it's a really good tradition we've got. I want to also talk about we haven't touched on yet, but your nickname and how that came about.
Well, everybody in NASCAR has a nickname,
right? I'll go ahead and say mine. So my nickname is, you might hear the crew guys call me Hadley every once in a while, and that came about because like my first weekend on the job, somebody introduced me, I think it was to Philippe, and he got it wrong. That's what he thought my name was, and it stuck. And I thought, it was like, well, it could be worse, so
you better roll with it, because if you don't like it,
they'll come up with something different.
They'll wear you out on it.
Oh,
because then they'll really hit you with it. If you're like, I don't really like that, and they're like, good, then it's definitely going to stick.
Oh yeah, true.
So everybody's got a nickname, and I used to have this, when I played ball, I had real long hair, and
We're gonna get some photos, maybe a video from you to post along with this, just so people get a visual.
Yeah, I was scary looking. I wasn't, you know, my fiance now says she wouldn't have dated me, and I wouldn't blame her. You know, I was terrifying looking. I was the guy when you walk down the road, you know, women were switching their purse to the other side. You know what I mean? Clenching. So I was terrifying looking. Kind of like a homeless Jesus that fell into steroids or something. So. Anyway, so
I think we got our title for this episode.
So, I went to the Great Clips right there in Pofftown, and I went in the lady and I said, "Hey, look." They were like, "You have such beautiful hair, yeah, yeah, yeah." You know, and I was like, "I want to cut this thing into a mullet," and everyone was like, And the lady was like, "I got you. I do about three of them a week." And I said, "All right." And she said, "Most of them is old ladies." And I said, "Well, then, you know, this will be good. Let me see if I can get this thing dialed in."
Oh,
so she
man.
Ends up cutting it into it. And it didn't look bad. It really actually kind of, it looked pretty solid.
So you look at it, you're like, man, it's kind of majestic.
I said, honestly, yeah. I mean, that's, I was like, this actually looks really good. And I was doing it as a joke for July 4th. And then all of a sudden that Hendrick thing, this was right before I was going there. And I was like, well, I got a clean cut. I got a thing. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to leave it. And I went over there, and it was just like every one of those guys was trying to take pictures with me, and they thought it was hilarious. And then I went to Daytona. After I came back over here, everyone loved it, and I kept it, you know, until I went to Daytona, and I screwed it all up, and I had to cut my hair off.
Yeah, but you didn't explain how. So what was the nickname?
Kenny Powers.
Yeah.
KP. So they still call me that on pit road. Right. Like guys will say, hey, KP, or, you know, Kenny, or stuff like that. And like, at first, I remember somebody, I brought my parents down here, and I wanted to show
them. Did they not know about it?
No, not really. Yeah. I showed them for family day, and this guy's like, I just, you know, I love Kenny. I mean, and my dad's standing there the whole time like, who is Kenny? You know what I mean? They're like, by the guy's like, you know, I love Kenny. I mean, if, you know, he's just a hardworking guy, and he's, you know, he's just a great guy to be around. And I remember looking over, and I was like, kind of like this awkward silence when my father was just like, cool. Had no clue who he was talking about. And I said, Dad, he's talking about me. And he was like, well, that's not your name. And I was like, well, Dad, I realize that's my nickname. And then, you know, we kind of had to explain that to him. But yeah, it's been, after I cut it off, the name still stuck.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it hadn't went away. I mean, that's just what you're known for. And like, James is Rick James.
Yeah.
And like, I went into the shop literally last week, and I was talking to some guys, and I was telling them, you know, James, he's working down the hill now. And he was like, James. And he goes, don't know him. And I went, how long you worked here? He said, 10 years. I said, well, he's worked here 7. I can't say I know him. I said, Rick.
And I have a feeling like this happens probably at more race teams than we think. Oh, probably more often.
And even in our own family, in our backyard. And the guy goes, oh, Rick James? Oh, yeah, I love Rick James. I've known him forever. And I'm like,
No,
his name is James Houck. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay, well, whatever, Rick James, yeah. So that's kind of what I deal with on a daily.
That's awesome. Well, we're running right here at the end of our time slot, so really appreciate you being on, man. This was a lot of fun, and a great way to kick off our new show. All right. Well, that was episode 1. That was pretty awesome, I'd say.
That was great.
Really good way to start things off there, and thanks again to Ian for coming on. That was awesome storytelling, and like we said, just can't wait to have him back on. Anyways, we really appreciate you guys listening, and thank you for starting this journey with us. In future episodes, we're really planning to have fan questions. We'd love to be interactive with you guys. We want to know, what do you want to know? What are you curious about? So there's a couple different ways you can submit your fan questions. First, you can tweet us at RP Motorsports on Twitter. Use hashtag RPMPod. If you don't have a Twitter, you want to do a little bit more old school, you can email us podcast@rpm43.com. That's podcast@rpm43.com. Or, you know, just comment on a YouTube video, and we're going to be checking it all, and hopefully next time around, we'll shout out some fan questions, see what you guys want to know, and should be able to provide some answers.
And to get you excited for the next podcast, who's going to be our next guest?
I don't know.
We don't know yet. But whoever.
TBD. TBD. On that one. But anyways, it'll be great.
If any of them are even remotely like that, then...
We've got quite the cast of characters here at the shop, so I'm not really worried. And you shouldn't be either. You should be excited. So if you liked what you heard, please subscribe. Leave us a review. If you didn't like it, sorry, but please tell us why. Because we're new to this podcast. We, you know, have some experience, and just looking forward to what you guys think and want to bring you a great product. So, that's about it for the day. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.